corner to Aguilar. Aguilar the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get things going this hour. It is Monday, November 4th. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Welcome to the Hot Stove Lounge with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts. Would love to have you along for the Flames Talk family ride. Got a busy hour ahead of you. Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, will join us. Derek Wills, voice of the Calgary Flames on the Daily Flames Roundtable. A lot to get to on this Monday edition and this Monday hour of Flames Talk. Vickers of NHL.com with us as well. Hello, AV.
How are we doing on this Monday, Patrick?
I'm doing very well. Good. Feeling very under the spotlight here.
You're always in the spotlight, partner, when I'm around.
We're also doing a little testing here at the Scotiabank Saddledome for a new Flames Talk Sportsnet 960 endeavors. So doing a little testing and doing the show on this Monday.
I like that little tease, long as Eric Francis isn't going to spill the beans on it all like he did Friday.
I don't really. We got some cameras in here. We got some lights in here. We're working. We're getting there. We're moving there. We're moving into the 21st
giving
century.
It away for free.
Hey, there was a lot of frustration after Sunday's loss to the Edmonton Oilers. At least that's the way I felt. I don't know if you picked up on the same thing.
Yeah.
Okay, you did. Even Ryan Huska looked very, very frustrated with the way that game went. And text line, callers, so on and so forth. I think a loss to Edmonton always does that, especially one where you felt like the Flames played well. But on top of that, there were a lot of frustrating parts of that game, like a bad start. Leon Draisaitl scores all alone in the slot 20 seconds in. You fall down 2-0. Then you watch them fight back, and Zach Hyman wins it in the third period on a power play goal. And I think it's how that power play came to be that frustrated people the most. It was the offensive zone high-sticking penalty from Martin Pospisil that put the Oilers on that power play. Nugent Hopkins finds Hyman for the game winner. He goes upstairs on Dan Vladar, and that's all it was that ends up being the difference in a 4-2 win. And I think that is what frustrated people the most. I think that is what had people pulling their hair out the most, is that an offensive zone penalty from a guy that at times in his season plus in the NHL has been prone to taking poorly timed, frustrating penalties. It bit the Flames again, and this time they weren't able to kill off the penalty. Is that a pretty good?
Yeah, I think that's
pretty good kind of summation of where the frustration is.
Yeah, I think so. And without diving too deep into it, I think it's more the perpetrator of the penalty than maybe even the penalty itself, perhaps the zone to a degree.
And the timing.
The timing was absolutely horrendous midway through the third period in a tie game in a Battle of Alberta that you, as you mentioned, had to claw your way back into after not starting on time. I understand the frustration from the coach. I understand it from the fan base. I understand it from probably the teammates as well, because there have been a lot of ill-timed penalties in Martin Pospisil's repertoire. If you go back through the old Rolodex, if we want to pull out really old things in terms of terminology, as we were talking off camera, off air. I think it's just a whole sort of conglomerate of frustration around Martin Pospisil with the penalties he's taken this year, some of the penalties he's taken last year, and of course the opponent and the timing of his latest infraction.
Which, again, and I think there's also a little bit, that's another home game where the Flames played pretty well. That's the last two home games the Flames had, or I guess two of the last three home games the Flames had. Late penalty, tie game against a good team.
Yep.
One of the penalties was frustrating because I think a lot of people thought it was soft, and I think that's a fair fair comment on the slash that Nazem Kadri was called on. And then this one, you're frustrated because it was an offensive zone penalty, high stick, that he didn't really need to take. This was head coach Ryan Huska on Sunday night when he was asked a little bit about Martin Pospisil.
We'll do our best to coach out of him. There's different ways you can do that. A lot of that's on the player. It's twice now, so it's not okay.
When you refer to Pospisil, you say that's the second time that a penalty of his has cost you the game?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So he's a type of player that's got to play with an edge, but it's not a reckless type style that he has to play, because at the end of the day, points are so valuable, so hard to win in this league, that if you overstep the boundary a little bit, then it can cost a team. So I think he understands it, and he's got to really work to be a better player in that regard for us.
It's a really interesting one, because this text comes in from Aaron, who says, not a frustrating penalty. He was busting his ass trying hard. Wasn't a lazy penalty. And I don't think it was a lazy penalty.
No.
I do not. I think lazy penalties are when you're not moving your feet. Lazy penalties are when you're, you know, behind the player, whatever the case may be.
A reach or a hold, your feet aren't moving, the other guy's is, and it's an easy call for the referee. This one,
It's kind of like it's a penalty that maybe you don't mind earlier in a game, but I think as a coach you say to yourself, you can't get over the line. You got a little bit more game management, I think, is maybe where the frustration comes in from Ryan Husko when you hear him right there. Like, and again, as he says, and this is one of the big picture topics that we'll get into in just a second, but you're talking about a guy who does walk the line, and he's most effective when he's walking the line, right? And so that therein lies the problem, is that how does this player end up walking the line where he doesn't end up putting his team on late game, tie game penalty kills, but is still able to be the most effective, impactful version of himself?
Yeah, because if you look at the penalty in isolation, this isn't an aggressive penalty, and this isn't a lazy penalty. And if you look at the act in isolation, if it's Michael Backlund, if it's Blake Coleman, if it's Nazem Kadri, if it's anybody else basically on the roster that goes to lift the stick of Ekholm had moved his stick out of the way and just eats some lumber right in the teeth, then we're not having this conversation about, yeah, that was a penalty that you don't want to take at that time of the game, but it's in the act of trying to, you know, maintain puck possession or entering a battle for a loose puck. But the fact that it's Martin Pospisil, the fact that throughout this young season, we've seen bad penalties from Martin Pospisil. As you heard Ryan Huska say, he's taken penalties that have cost the Calgary Flames games. It becomes a talking point because of who did it, not the penalty itself, which is fair and unfair at the same time. Because again, Michael Backlund does this. It's an unfortunate timing of a stick lift that catches an opposing player right in the face. But because it's Martin Pospisil, yeah, because he's been benched before for bad penalties, because you go back to last season and the whole... I don't even want to call it a dialogue or a narrative because it was warranted, but having to learn how to take better penalties, if that makes sense. You're fine with roughing penalties, you're fine with aggressive penalties, but you got to get rid of those error-type penalties, those lazy or not moving your feet or stick infractions that happen 180 feet away from your net. Because it's Martin Pospisil and because it's happened before this season, because it happened a lot last season, it's very much a talking point now.
This was Martin on Sunday night as well. He came out, faced the music, spoke to the media post-game, and was asked about the penalty and his thoughts on it.
It feels pretty bad, especially when I try to be careful on that kind of penalty, you know. And all of a sudden, I tried to lift the stick, and all of a sudden, it was a high stick. Yeah, it feels bad, and it can happen, especially in a tight game, and... I have to learn from it.
So where are we overall on Pospisil? Because this was one of, let's first of all, quick little history lesson. I don't know if you agree with this, but I think you do. Like, one of the most impactful players on the team last year, when it comes to the way that he impacted things on the forecheck, the way that he got under opposition skins, the way that he meshed with Nazem Kadri on that line. I mean, I thought Martin Pospisil was, first of all, the revelation of last season. With no disrespect to Connor Zeri, Zeri's a first-round pick, and I think there was a little bit more of an expectation that Connor could jump in and be an effective NHLer. You know, when Martin Pospisil got called up a year ago, I was like, what is Connie doing here? Like, what, Martin Pospisil? You know, not a lot of people thought this was going to work out, and it did. Last year, he was one of the not only pleasant surprises, but also one of the most effective players in his role on the team. Are we seeing that as much? The perception, I think, from a lot of people is that we're not seeing that as much from him through 12 games this season. Is that your perception as well?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to go back to your previous point, I think he was the biggest disturber on the Calgary Flames last season, probably the biggest pleasant surprise, as you sort of mentioned, and arguably the most exciting player on the team because he had the ability to torch a defenseman wide, make a skill move, and score a goal while at the same time running a defenseman through the boards. Whether that was legal or illegal, it was still interesting to see how he was able to disrupt the opponent both physically and with his skill. And we haven't seen that near enough this season, in my opinion. Part of it, I think, is the early season penalty trouble and him trying to walk a finer line. And that hasn't necessarily worked in all instances for Martin Pospisil, but it's also come, from my perspective, at the expense of perhaps his effectiveness in being a disturber, because he's so mindful now of making sure that he's not on the bad side of a bad penalty, which of course he has been. And I think to a degree that's impacted the way he's able to impact a game.
I want to see him being...
I want to see him being reckless, but not with the stick stuff.
I want to see him being more of a rat. Like yep. he was last yep. year, in the most positive connotation possible. Like, I want him to have other teams at his throat. I want him to also be disrupting things with his speed and his forecheck. And you know what? We've seen a lot of that at different times this year. I remember in the, I don't remember which game it was, the Winnipeg game, I think it was, where he broke up that pass and went in on a breakaway and did a really, it was either the Carolina or the Winnipeg game where he did a nice job of getting in a lane and going on a breakaway. I thought that he was very strong in game two against Philly.
Philly was his best game.
I thought he was even better in game three against Edmonton, in Edmonton, where they won that game. Like, that line with him, Mantha, and Huberdeau, that was the game that I came away saying, man, maybe Conroy and Huska have something here with Pospisil in the middle, Mantha and Huberdeau, and it definitely tailed off from there. And I do wonder, like, it feels like, and this is all credit to Wes Gilbertson. I was talking with him after the game on Sunday.
Bring up that
name.
I'm
sorry. Well, you had left already. Wes was here. I finished the show Sunday and Wes was still here, which is very strange. So Wes and I talked a little bit, and Wes's point was it kind of looks like, and you can almost tell that he's trying not to take penalties. And by trying not to take penalties, you're overthinking it a little bit, and just kind of that natural way that he plays on the edge and being such a hard-nosed forechecker, we're not seeing it the same way as consistently. You throw that into also the extra hamster wheel going on with playing center, and I wonder if those things have made a little bit of an impact.
Yeah, I was going to draw the parallel between his thought process in overthinking the game to not take penalties to his thought process playing down the middle, where it's taking him a half a second longer to make decisions because he's not, whether or not it's not that he's comfortable or just not used to those reps where he's got to think things through just a little bit longer. I think it's a case of overthinking for Martin Pospisil. Now, I think you can make a very clear argument that he's underthought some situations and it's gotten him in trouble as well. So there, we talk about wanting to walk a fine line between playing tough, playing edgy, and not going over that edge. Well, there's also that line between overthinking and underthinking, which is probably a parallel to that as well, where you've got to get Martin Pospisil dialed into a certain spot there, and then he goes out and he's effective. And he hasn't quite found that over the course of the young season so far. Case in point, he doesn't have a point in nine games.
What do we got here at 960? This says he sounds like a young Sam Bennett. I think there's actually a really good parallel there. I don't know if Pospisil's skill will ever be as high-end as maybe what Bennett's is. Maybe it will. But that's actually not a bad comparison. We're not, like, lots of text coming in about, well, why didn't they call the Oilers on this? That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this one call in a bubble. This is from Bill and YYC. Pospisil, love him. Should they trade him for a true center? You have to trade something good to get something. I don't know if that is the way to go and get a true center. I think there are other ways to do that. And I still think the Pospisil experiment is something that the Pospisil center ice experiment is something that is still worthwhile in terms of the overall development. This reads, boys, Pospisil is a rookie and still learning. I don't understand all this criticism from the coach, fans, etc. I feel another Sam Bennett in the making by the organization if they don't get this figured out. The job of a coach is to put the players in the best position to strive, is it not? We will see how it plays out with Martin Pospisil going forward. I still think that there is a ton there, and I still think that there is a lot to be unlocked. And I even think that we've seen a lot of positives from him this year, despite the frustrations of some coming out of Sunday night.
The only thing I'd push back on that is Martin Pospisil's in his fifth pro season now, so it's not like we're talking about an 18 or a 19-year-old making the jump from junior to the NHL. Martin Pospisil's
got
a lot of runway.
But it is still just his second NHL season.
But you still would learn a lot of these lessons at the American Hockey League level. You would certainly learn them when you're back in Slovakia playing for Košice, when he had his limited time there as well. I do think that there is still a learning curve because everything happens faster at the NHL, but it's not as though we're talking about
right.
a 20-year-old rookie finding his way in the NHL. I mean, he did play 63 games last year, too.
Text line's open, 960-960. It is Flames Talk on a Monday from the Scotiabank Saddledome. Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you. And on Mondays, we check in with the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, who just happens to be Trent Cull, who joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. But I think there's a little bit more to the Wranglers right now than just the Calgary Wranglers. Not only are they the number one affiliate of the Calgary Flames, they're also the hottest team in the American League with 9 consecutive wins. They are 9-1-0 to start the season, and they are the number one team in the AHL by every metric. That sounds like a better way to intro the head coach of the Wranglers who joins us right now. Mr. Cull, how are we doing on this Monday?
I'm still doing good. I appreciate the intro. That's very nice, very nice.
Well, I mean, there's not a whole lot going on with your team right now, is there? I mean, just the 9 consecutive wins, not a bad little heater your group's on right now.
Yeah, you know what? We've gotten some, you know, just being honest, I think we talked last week, we've got some great goaltending. Still got some areas to improve upon, that's for sure. And also, there's a few of those games, too, you know, like I'd say the first one against San Diego last weekend, like, we weren't very good. And we got lucky. We found a way to kind of persevere and get some near the end and then find a way to win right at the end. So some pretty timely things have been happening, but overall, I like the direction we're moving it.
Well, let's talk about the two games that you've played since we spoke to you last. You'd won 7 straight when we spoke to you last Monday. And then, as you mentioned, the first game against San Diego on Tuesday, maybe not where you wanted your group, but you found a way. And then a much better effort 2 nights later on Thursday. How would you sum up Tuesday and Thursday against that Gull squad?
Yeah, you said it, and that's, you know, I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but I thought that that was the finish of that series was 10-20, and so in other words, 10 games and 20 nights with, a trip to California for 8 to 9 days there in between there. So I think that we came out that one night, and we were slow, and hats off to San Diego. They were flying, and all of a sudden, it's just we weren't playing where we needed to play. But we're, like you said, we're fortunate. Some guys stepped up, goaltenders, Clark Bishop again, and we got a couple goals and found a way to win. And then I thought the next night was just a way more complete effort, probably our best defensive game of the year. And so that's, it was a nice win for that. That's what I was talking to the boys about, the 10 and 20 nights, and let's make sure we're taking advantage of every situation we can, and I thought we were more rested and we did a better job.
You you talk about, say, maybe a game that you didn't love, but you find a way. Like, when you've got a group that's winning, but you also have things to work on, from a coaching standpoint, you and your staff, like how much easier is it to drive home some of those messages when you're also still having some success?
Yeah, it is. It really is. Like, it's a great group, and I've praised them before. And I mean, just that alone, like those 10 games and 20 nights, and to come out and rip off 9 in a row, like, really good job by them. I mean, they deserve, a lot of respect with that and how they played and kept going through it. And then, but I do feel like we're starting to trend the right way. You know what I mean? So, and it's nice. It is really nice to be fortunate enough to come out and win those games when some nights it's not always going the way. So, it's just been a lot of a lot. I think what I do like about our team is I think we're doing the right things. We're trying to do the right things. We may make some mistakes, and that's going to happen. We understand that. But we also got some guys that are game breakers, too, and they're stepping up and ready to go at the start of the year.
The can you just give us a little bit of a sense from a coaching standpoint, or even when you played, like walking into a locker room when you're in the midst of a heater like this, Trent, what's the buzz like, and what's the overall vibe like with a group that is going like yours is, and just enjoying coming to the rink as a result?
Yeah, it's, you know what, it's fun. It's fun. It's fun as a player. It's fun as a coach. I mean, you love being around them. We've had a couple, you know, where you get to take a breath and really kind of have a couple giggles and have some fun, you know. And so we've had a few of those, which has been great. And then also, too, you know, got a coach who always wants better, right? So he's always pushing and prodding. And the one thing about, like I was talking to him a lot about, is just when you're on a heater, like it's tough to keep it going, but you want to find a way to keep it going, right? You got to keep pushing. You got to keep, because sometimes near the end of those, you win games maybe you shouldn't, aren't supposed to win, but you still keep finding a way. So the thing is, once you're on one, you want to make sure that you stay on it as long as you possibly can.
Trent Kulza with us, the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, joins us every Monday here on Flames Talk. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers with you on this Monday, Vicks.
Coach, you had Sam Honzik at the tail end of last season. You've seen him at development camp. You've seen him at Penticton and training camp. I'm just curious what you're learning about Sam Honzik along the way.
You know what? I'd be kind of like every other fan right now, because really, like, last year was just a short cup of coffee. He played a couple games at the end of the year, and that's, you know, it's not like I really could dig into his game at all. And then we see him in Penticton, and I thought he was solid. You know what I mean? But then I thought he came to training camp in the Flames, and I guess what I'm learning is he can turn his volume up, so to speak. You know what? I thought he did a great job in Flames camp. Thought he did a great job in preseason and to start the year with the Flames. So I'm just excited to have Sam. We're talking today just about some checking details and things that we feel like translates from our level to the NHL level. But I think for him, it'll be just great to get back, play, and he's going to get, you know, his chances are he's going to get more touches here. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be around the puck more, be able to make some more plays. And I think that's something that he's looking forward to doing, and I'm looking forward to seeing him do it.
In terms of utilization, is there a plan for him? Is he a guy that's going to see some power play time, some penalty kill time, just from a developmental standpoint? What kind of situations will Sam see himself in?
Yeah, I personally, obviously, you know, 5-on-5, we're going to set him up there in a good spot. And also, too, I think that he's going to be on the penalty kill quite a bit. You know, we want to get him out there. I thought that was something that he looked good with in Penticton. He's a big guy, big long stick. I love the way he skates, you know what I mean? So I think this is something that, again, one of those traits that translates from here to the NHL. And yeah, of course, he's going to get a couple reps for sure on the power play and get some looks, and it probably depends on whom we have in and out of the lineup every night too. But for sure, the other things I think are going to be there, and I know he's going to play in all situations for sure.
Hard to sort of imagine this, but he's still a teenager. He doesn't hit 20 until his birthday is November 12th, 8 days. So just a friendly reminder for you, just in case. But from a developmental standpoint, what's important for a 20-year-old to learn as he navigates his first professional season?
I guess I would say the consistency of being a professional. So in other words, you know, you just can't have one good game a weekend or, you know, and then not so good the next night. It's that shift in, shift out, being difficult to play against. And what I mean by that is, you know, being aggressive on the puck, like checking away from the puck, getting the puck back. And I think those are just the things of your work, the things that you can control, right? Like, how is your work, you know, how hard are you working every night? You know, where are you in the right positions? You know, so, I mean, I think those are things that if he dials in on those in his first year, like I think that I've been really happy for him as an outsider, maybe more as a fan than anybody else, just to see how he is, you know, how he started. And it's been a great start for him. So it's exciting for us to kind of almost get our hands on him a bit.
And another player you've just recently got back, I'm sure you're probably not too upset about getting Adam Klapka back onto your roster. What does he add, or what can he bring to a team that's been so successful in this young season as you have?
Yeah, you know what? One of the things analytically, we need to be better in around the opposing team's net. You know, some tips, just rebound play. So that's something that we're working on for sure ourselves as a team. And that's something, though, that Adam really, I think he excelled at. You know, and he'd be another guy the same as Sam. He's going to get some more touches down here, get himself out there. I thought he had quite a few chances the other night. He didn't find the scoreboard, but he was around it. And because he does those things about getting to the opposing team's net, he opens up opportunities. Like Stronkin scores a goal on the power play. Well, big old clapper standing right in front of the goalie. It's not easy to see around that fella, right? So he helps out our team a lot. And the other thing is that he's a big guy who's physical and great on the forecheck. And it's great to see him rumbling around out there because the other team's beast certainly know when he's out there.
Just a couple more players wanted to ask you about, Trent. It's Trent Cull, head coach of the red-hot Calgary Wranglers. They've won 9 straight after a loss to start the season. 9 in a row, 9-1-0, and the number one team in the American Hockey League are the Wranglers. You know, we've talked a lot about Rory Cairns. We've asked you about Jacob Pelche and Walker Duehr. Obviously, you had Coronado down there. We just talked about Hanzek and Klapka. But very quietly, going at a point-per-game pace, is a guy that I know the organization is very fond of. The coaching staff at the NHL is very fond of Dryden Hunt. He had a great training camp with the Flames once again before starting with your group. And there he is with 10 points in 10 games. This guy's just he's just a good pro, isn't he? He's just a guy that you want to have in your locker room at whatever level, isn't he?
I think so. Like, I mean, I can't speak for Husk, you know, there, but I know he's a guy who could probably, like, float in around his lineup. In other words, he can be a checker there. He's a guy who's got skill who can move up and down the lineup when you need him to. So, I mean, for us here, he's a driver. I mean, he's a skilled guy who controls puck play for us at this level. And also, too, he's a motivated guy. He's a competitor. And you can see, you ever watch a game with Hunty, like, he wants the puck. He wants to, you know, he wants to do good things. And he gets some guys on his coattails, too. And so that's where I love him down here. Plays in all situations. We really like him. And we still think he's getting better and better as a hockey player.
And then one of the other vets that's really important in your group, you mentioned him a little earlier, but what's with all those game winners from Clark Bishop? I mean, I guess at this level, we should be pretty accustomed to it. He just comes to play for your group each and every night.
I think Bishop's had a great, like, start of the year. Like, I thought he was really good in Flames camp. I thought he played some good preseason games up there for them, and I just liked how he's looked. And then down here, he does a lot of the dirty work. You know, he tracks really well. He checks hard as a forechecker, but he's always working. You know, he's got such a hard work ratio. And then it's nice to see him get rewarded. And, you know, I think he's feeling it right now, which is great. And we're really happy for him because, tell you what, he's had some big goals for us here just in the last, you know, 2 weeks alone.
Last one for you, and once again, Trent, you've got a game coming up, so I can ask you about Bakersfield. It's the AHL's version of the Battle of Alberta Tuesday, Wednesday here at the Scotiabank Saddledome. Tell us about the challenge and what your group expects from that Bakersfield group over the next couple of games.
They're a little bit of a model of their parent club in the past. They've had, you know, really good power play. They're a team that's got some older veterans who have pretty good experience and pretty good high-end skilled players. So they're a team that's been, if you'll notice, like, they're not, like, they're right in the middle of the pack here right now, but they've got a lot of, like, they've lost twice in overtime. They lost one in a shootout. So they're always a team that's picking up points right now, and I think they're a team just to kind of be very, I guess, aware of. So for us, it'll be a really good battle here back-to-back.
Well, Trent, really appreciate the time, as always. Keep it going, and we'll be watching Tuesday and Wednesday when your group takes on that Bakersfield team. Thanks so much for doing this. We will, I guess you got 4 games before we talk with you next week. Looking forward to it, though. Have a great week ahead. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Pat. Appreciate it, guys.
He is Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us every week here on Flames Talk. A little rundown on that Wranglers group. And by the way, Wednesday's game for the Wranglers live right here on Sportsnet 960. The family play Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday, we've got Flames action for you, Calgary and Montreal. Then Wednesday, Wranglers and Baco, as they call it in the American League. Bakersfield, we've got that for you with SP, Logo, GVP, and Matty Rose, all on the call for you. That's coming up on Wednesday. Trent Cull joined us, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy football and hockey game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
And now on this Monday edition of the program, time for our daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. Gentlemen, as part of that 4-2 loss on Sunday against the Edmonton Oilers, boy, was Andre Kuzmenko electric. You know, he got benched on Friday against New Jersey. Start Sunday's game in the Battle of Alberta on the fourth line. Very quickly shows that he is on it. He looked dynamic right from puck drop. Gets elevated onto the line with Nazem Kadri and Martin Pospisil, demoting Connor Zeri. And so, absolutely, Sunday, Battle of Alberta. That was a dynamite game from Andre Kuzmenko. The problem is, for six or seven games prior, he was pretty invisible or worse on this group, including Friday's game where he got benched for almost 28 straight minutes. Boys, when we're talking about Andre Kuzmenko, how do the Flames get more of the good version of Andre and less of when he kind of isn't impacting things positively?
Well, I think that managers and coaches can put players in a position to succeed. Ultimately, guys, I don't think it's up to the Flames to get more out of Andre Kuzmenko. I think it's up to Andre Kuzmenko to get more out of himself. I mean, you watch him in that Battle of Alberta against the Oilers, and you're reminded of why he had 39 goals and 74 points in his first 81 career NHL games with the Canucks a couple of seasons ago. And even last year, I know it wasn't a great year for him, and he was certainly better with the Flames than he was with the Canucks, but still 22 goals and 46 points, and you know, that's nothing to shake a stick at. So the fact that he's got one goal and 7 points in the first 12 games this season is disappointing. He isn't great defensively. He's not fantastic away from the puck, but you know, offensively, he can be a high-end player. And with the puck, he is as dynamic a player as the Flames have, and I think when he's at his best, maybe one of the most electrifying players to watch in the NHL. And that guy showed up to play at Scotiabank Saddledome on Sunday night. I do think a big part of it for him, and this goes not just for Andre Kuzmenko, but for a lot of top players around the league. If a team's power play is struggling, I think that that can bleed into a player's five-on-five game as well. And Pat, you talked about Kuzmenko struggling for six or seven games. Well, what did that line up with? It lined up with the Flames' power play going 0-for-18 during a six- or seven-game stretch. So quite often when a player gets rewarded with goals or points in the power play, builds their confidence, and that usually leads to more goals and points at five-on-five. So when the power play is struggling, and Kuzmenko certainly has been a huge part of the Flames' power play in his two seasons with the team, I think that can lead to a player kind of fighting at five on five. And I do think there's a little bit of that in his game, but you know, watching him on Sunday night, he was for me the most entertaining player on the ice, not the most productive, yeah, but the most entertaining just because of, you know, how he uses his edges. He's so strong in the puck, you know, that the fact that he's able to turn on a dime and do so much in so little space. So, you know, Andre Kuzmenko just has to show up and play that kind of hockey. And if he does, the goals and points will come, and then I think it's going to be easier for him to play like that on a more consistent basis.
Yeah, his edge work and hands are insane. They're incredible. He has a massive amount of skill. There's no doubt about it. And we've all seen him do his stick handling drill and warm up where he dangles through a dozen pucks before letting off a shot. which I think consensus amongst everybody in this room and in this discussion is he's got a top three shot on the team. I like you, Willsie, in the sense that if I had the answer to unlocking Kuzmenko, I wouldn't be on this broadcast right now. I'd be somewhere making a little bit more money working for one of 32 NHL teams. But if I were to relay any advice, it's start using your shot more. He has arguably the best shot, if not top three. He hasn't had more than two shots in any one game this season. He's been held to zero shots twice. He's had one shot four times. That is 50%, one shot or zero shots, 50% of the time this season for a guy with his shot and his hands and his ability with that puck protection skills, with that stick handling ability. He's able to work himself into spots on the ice that other guys just can't by sheer way of how skilled and how determined he is when he does have the puck on his stick. I think it comes down to, you mentioned 39 goals a couple years ago with the Vancouver Canucks. That doesn't happen by accident. You don't just fluke your way into a 39-goal season. You have to have the shot, the skills, and the ability to get into spots where you can be productive like that. So in terms of trying to jumpstart Kuzmenko, I would just start encouraging him to, you know, don't look off shot opportunities for maybe a low percentage. And this kind of mimics Jonathan Huberdeau a little bit at times. Don't look off shooting opportunities for the sake of a low percentage pass. Just start funneling everything you can to the net. Don't worry about making that one extra move to see if you can put yourself in an incrementally better position to try and score. Just funnel everything you can to the net, and eventually the shot, the results will come with the shot that he has.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how. I mean, I think part of a coaching staff's job is to get the most out of their players. But to your point, Willsie, there's also the other side of that coin where the player also has to answer that bell. And I don't ever get the sense that Kuzmenko is checked out or doesn't want to put in the effort or anything like that. Like he's got a really great attitude. He seems, at least when he spoke with us, like or speaks with us, when he spoke post game on Sunday following the Oilers loss, he was very critical of himself and all that type of stuff. So it feels like there's a lot of accountability there, and he wants to be the best version possible of himself for this team. I don't know how to get that Kuzmenko, the good Kuzmenko, the dynamic Kuzmenko on a regular basis. Willsie, I remember last year having conversations in January, I guess it would have been February, after the trade was made in late January, talking about how, you know, this might be the most dynamic offensive player that they've got on the team and that they've had since Johnny Gaudreau. And when he's on and when he's doing those things, I think you see that in action. The problem is those nights have been maybe a little too far and few and far between. And we saw lots of them in the final 15 or 20 games of last year where you're like, hold on a second, maybe there's something there with Kuzmenko. This year it's been, again, too few and far between. And it still makes it like I still don't know how this Kuzmenko story plays out. I know there's talk about maybe the door's open for some sort of extension. And I don't think that should be closed, but I don't think you can be making a decision on that on November 4th. There's a lot of talk about could they get something of value for him, an asset, if they were to flip him at the trade deadline. Well, if he's going to be somewhat frequently benched or demoted to the fourth line, you're probably not getting a lot for him there. So it is such a conundrum with this player that you need to find a way to get more out of him, no doubt about it. You need to get that version of him on a more regular basis. And you know, I do think, to wrap my thoughts all up in a bow here, Willsie, I do think, with no disrespect to Matt Coronato, I do think at some point putting him back on that number one power play unit on a regular basis is the way to do that. And especially after what we saw from him against the Oilers, I think having him back there for this road trip or to start the road trip in Montreal is probably the way to go, because that's when he's got the most room. That's when he's at his most dangerous. And as we've talked about so many times in the past, and Willsie, what you kind of led off with, you know, guys like that feed off the power play, and their 5-on-5 game builds from the power play. So that would be one area, absolutely, that maybe you could start with here.
Yeah, and that's not in any way, shape, or form a knock on Matt Coronato, who I think is playing his best hockey right now, and maybe he's here to stay. You know, he kind of looks like he might be. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, I do like the accountability that I am seeing from this team right now. When Ryan Huska thinks a guy isn't playing the way that he needs to play to be successful himself and to help the team have success, he sits him. We've seen it a number of times with Martin Pospisil. And I think it's a little bit different with him because the penalties have been the big problem with Pospisil. And if he's not playing on the edge, then he's not as effective. So I feel like he's trying to find himself in a way right now and try to figure out what he can and what he can't do and how to be the same type of player that he was last year. But with Andre Kuzmenko, I think the message was actually pretty simple, guys. Move your feet. You got to move your feet. And I think we've seen that same message delivered to a number of Flames players this season, Jonathan Huberdeau, Anthony Mantha. But what you want to see when a not-so-indirect message is sent to a player, and when I say that, I mean benching him, whether it be for half a period or for half a game, like we saw with Kuzmenko versus the Devils on a Friday night, you'll want to see the right response. We saw the right response on Sunday, despite the fact that, you know, if he wanted to, he could have been down in the dumps about not being on the first power play, could have been down in the dumps about being on, you know, the wing on the fourth line with Ryan Lomberg and Kevin Rooney. Instead, he just dug in and played, I think, his best game of the season, even though the numbers wouldn't lead you to believe that as far as the goals and the points go. But, you know, he just is so much fun to watch, even at practice. You know, practice is kind of boring sometimes. But when I see Andre Kuzmenko starting to work on a shot, I get excited. I perk up because it's so much fun to watch just because of how the puck comes off of his stick. And again, you talked about the edge work, Aaron. It's so much fun to watch him play that way. So I think message received, a great response to him being sat on the bench or being a grocery stick, as Megan Mickelson likes to say, in the back half of that game against the Devils. Plays a really good game against the Oilers, and we'll see if he can make it two in a row and where that maybe leads him, maybe back into the first power play, maybe back into the top nine in tomorrow's game against the Canadiens.
Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Monday version of Flames Talk. And, you know, Willsy, we kind of touched on this a little bit on Sunday's Flames Talk postgame. But, you know, all of a sudden, after winning 5 of 6 to start the season, the Flames have now answered that with losing 5 of 6 in regulation. And they need to get things back on track. They got a 3-game Eastern Conference road trip starting Tuesday in Montreal. And there are the Canadiens who... A lot of people thought this year might be a year that they take a step forward. This could be a year where maybe the Habs start to move a little bit closer to where ultimately Kent Hughes wants this group to be. Now, maybe not off to exactly that start, but and what do we make of this Montreal team the Flames will be playing to start this road trip Tuesday night?
Well, they've got a lot of good young players, but I think they're proof that rebuilding or retooling or re-whatevering, it isn't easy. It's not easy to do. And you have to have a lot of patience. At least usually you have to have a lot of patience. I mean, the Rangers are an example of a team that sent a letter to their season ticket holders saying, hey, we're going to try to restart this thing. And then our Artemi Panarin winds up in their lap and, you know, they're able to quickly turn things around. But that usually doesn't happen. So, you know, the Montreal Canadiens are a team that tried to reboot and got lots of high draft picks, and they've got lots of good young players, but they're struggling. I mean, there's one team in the NHL that has fewer points than the Habs do. So that is certainly not the start to the season that they wanted. And I know that there's been some talk that Martin St-Louis might be on the hot seat if this season doesn't turn around fairly quickly. But again, it's tough to be patient, especially in a hockey mad market like Montreal. And you know, I spent more than 10 seasons calling games for the Canadiens American Hockey League affiliate. And I know how passionate the hockey fans are here in Montreal, and they can turn on you pretty quickly. You know, if the season's going well and a game's going well and all of a sudden they don't like what they see in the third period, there could be boos inside of Bell Center. That's just how much they love the game and how much they love this team. And you know, being patient, I don't think is easy in any market, but I think is especially tough in a market like Montreal. And when I say patient, I mean that patience has to come right from the top. From ownership, from management, from coaches, from players, from sponsors, from fans. And I just don't think that this market is prepared to wait a decade for the Canadiens to be relevant again. So we'll see where it goes. Again, they've got a lot of good young pieces, but you've got to surround those young players with veteran players to help them develop and progress. And to this point, the season has not gone the Canadiens' way. And I'm not sure that when all is said and done, they're going to be a team that's fighting for a playoff spot after the NHL's trade deadline. So I talked about patience at the start of my answer, and I feel like Habs fans are going to have to be patient for a little while longer. And when I say a little while, maybe more than a little while longer.
Yeah, from halfway across the country, it feels like they've significantly underachieved to this point in the season. They're not alone, and you look at some of those rebuilding teams in the East, whether it's the Detroit Red Wings, whether it's the Buffalo Sabres, they're not exactly vaulting themselves up the standings over in the East. Montreal Canadiens tied for second last in points percentage at 375, tied for second last in goals against at 50, second last in goals differential at minus 17, have lost three straight. But then you look at some of the individual pieces, and those results don't necessarily seem to add up. Cole Caulfield's tied for the NHL lead with 10 goals. Sam Montembeau entered the season with a lot of buzz around potentially being a goalie for Canada at the Four Nations, and he backstopped Canada gold at the 2023 World Championship with Mackenzie Weegar. Lane Hutson has been in all over the highlight reels, and he's got 7 assists in 12 games, averaging nearly 23 minutes of ice time. Nick Suzuki is a point-per-game player. You look at Juraj Slafkovský, and what, like, you start running through the list of all the arsenal or the weapons that the Montreal Canadiens have, and then you look 4-7-1, 9 points through 12 games, and, you know, tied for 28th overall in the standings or whatever it happens to be. It just doesn't seem like those individual parts are translating to the success on the whole for the Montreal Canadiens.
Yep.
It's a little bit puzzling. It's a little bit disappointing. And as you say, Wilsey, I can't imagine there's a whole lot of patience in Montreal right now.
Well, and I mean, you go take a look at some of the underlyings. They have not been a team that controls games. They've been a team that has not allowed their goaltending to really – I mean, they've been – take a look at this at 5-on-5, 137 high-danger chances against compared to just 92 for one of the worst differentials in the NHL. In fact, the worst differential in the NHL. They bleed shot attempts. They bleed scoring chances. They do not make life easy on Primo or Montembeau in net, and those guys have also struggled. They also have one of the worst team save percentages in the NHL. Just everything from, like, the offense or the red line towards their net has been poor this year. They have got some really nice pieces. You've got your Cy Young Award front runner in Cole Caulfield at 10-1, 10 goals, 1 assist. Nick Suzuki, I think, is a player. I don't know if he is a high-end number one center, but he definitely is Montreal's number one center. I think Lane Hutson has nothing but upside and nothing but exciting things to come for him. But I just think any talk, Wilsey, of them being ready, any talk of this team being ready to crest and, like, be back into the Eastern Conference playoff picture, it just I wasn't fully on board with it because they just a lot of their pieces haven't fully hit yet. Like, I think Caulfield has turned himself into one of the premier goal scorers in this league, and I don't think that is going to change anytime soon. And I like Suzuki. I think Hudson's going to be a great player. I think Montembeau's a nice goaltending prospect. But, you know, the individual players from Slafkovský and some of the others, they're going to need to be at their optimum or kind of what they're going to be in the NHL. They're not there yet. So it still feels like this team is a few years away, a year or two away from really being back in the playoffs. And to your point, does that market have the patience for what Kent Hughes is trying to do? I hope so, because I actually think he's got the team on a very nice course. I just don't think that course is ready to really bear fruit yet this season.
And having good young pieces doesn't mean that you're on your way to the promised land. I mean, look at the Oilers. 4 first overall picks dating back to Taylor Hall. And what have they won? Yeah, I know they went to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final a season ago, but it took Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl a long time to get there. And we're talking about two players who are in another world from the guys who the Canadians have. And that's with no disrespect to Nick Suzuki, who I think is a fantastic young top six centerman. Cole Caulfield, one of the best young goal scorers in the game. Juraj Slafkovský. Not all first overall picks are the same, guys. He's a good player, but he's not Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews. I'm sorry. So we'll see. I'm not sure the Canadians are even within a year or two of contending. I think a lot of things would have to fall into place. I think their young guys would have to start playing more of a 200-foot game. I think they'd have to draft and develop well. I think they'd have to, you know, bring in the right guys in free agency. Again, rebuilding, retooling, it's not easy to do, and it takes time. And if there's one market in the NHL, maybe outside of Toronto, although I'd put Montreal right there, if there's one market in the league or maybe one of two or three markets in the league that probably isn't willing to wait a decade for their team to maybe be good, I think I'm sitting in it right now.
See what the Habs bring against the Flames on Tuesday night in Montreal. For now, we will wrap things up on our Daily Flames roundtable. Thank you, Willsy. We'll do it again on Tuesday.
Okay, guys. Have a great night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program, and that'll start to wrap up, or that will wrap up, our Daily Flames Roundtable. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Vergy, our producers this hour as well. Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.